Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I talk with freelance designer and host of the Makers of Sport podcast, Adam Martin. Makers of Sport is a sports design and branding podcast that interviews notable designers in the world of sport. We talk about how Adam got into sports branding, where the podcast started, and more, all right after this.
Do you like quality pocket-sized notebooks? Then you should check out Dapper Notes. Every Dapper Notes pocket-sized notebook is 100% handmade, printed, cut, sewn, bound, packaged, and shipped right here in the USA, with a double cloth cover made from two materials, a good-looking fabric on the outside, backed by book cloth on the inside, and a durable hand-sewn binding. These books will last a long time. Order now and you can get either Dapper Notes Holiday Bundle with two handmade notebooks at 26% off, or save $15 off the Dapper Notes Bookhead Club. They are a perfect gift for the stationery lover in your life. Visit dappernotes.com and order yours today.
Is your idea of a good time matching together magic symbols to summon horrific monsters and ancient Lovecraftian deities? You're in luck! Necronomicards is a fast-paced, cutthroat indie card game of pattern recognition and backstabbing for 2 to 4 players. Beautifully illustrated and extremely fun and easy to learn, it's the perfect game for any fan of horror or mythology in your life. Learn more and pick up a copy at www.necronomicards.com. Skillshare is an online learning community for creators with more than 10,000 classes in design, photo, and more. Everyone can take a class, try a project, and even teach a class themselves. Premium membership begins at just $8 a month for unlimited access to learning. Plus, you can earn money by teaching on Skillshare, which means students have access to the most relevant, up-to-date creative skills. Students learn everything from design, to business, to photography, film, craft, culinary, music, writing, technology, and more from the world's best teachers. You can learn at your own pace and on the go with their free mobile apps on both Apple and Android devices. For busy people like you and me, Skillshare classes are designed to be bite-sized with short video lessons to fit your schedule. For example, I just wrapped up Draplin's lesson on making a family crest and have a lesson from DKNG queued up and ready to go. You can learn at your own pace and on the go with their free mobile apps on both Apple and Android devices. Plus, for a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to CreativeSouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. All right, Adam, thanks for joining me tonight.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm very happy to be here.
So let's start from the beginning. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up about 35 miles east of Lexington, Kentucky, in a small town called Mount Sterling. Mm-hmm. And went to high school there, played basketball and soccer and ran track. And then ended up going to school for a BFA in graphic design at Eastern Kentucky University, which is about 20 minutes south of Lexington.
Okay. So yep. When you were growing up, you know, aside from playing basketball and soccer, were you into art and stuff at the time?
Yeah, I was. I was really into art and especially drawing. I mean, growing up, I was into comic books. Mm-hmm. You know, real hardcore into superheroes. And I mean, I was into toys too. You know, there was always something where you just I just noticed things, I guess. It's kind of, you know how it is as an artistic person, you just have this intuitive nature and you see things and you notice even like, why does He-Man's calf look the way that it looks? You know what I'm saying? It's like my dad's calves don't look like that.
No one's calves look like that.
Exactly. But yeah, so so I was into drawing, and my parents, my grandmother on my mother's side, so my mother's mother mm-hmm. was always a very crafty person. She was always like painting sweatshirts for us and going, like, she got into basket weaving at one point, and she was just always into those types of things. And I think that's where I sort of got that creativity from. But you know, just with, as with most people, it's kind of like, you know, you get your parents, and if they're not artistic people themselves, it's kind of like, you know, you're going to college and you're going to major in art. What are you going to do with that? but I will say though, my dad did, when I did take a drawing, a liking to drawing, my dad did buy me one of those. You remember those school desks that were just made of wood, and it was like the old school, like all one piece. You sat down in it and the desk was attached to the chair.
Yeah.
He ended up going to a garage sale and finding a desk. And so he set me up a desk like in the sort of TV room of our house. So while they watch TV, I would sit over there and draw superheroes and stuff like that.
Cool. So going through like high school and all, did you get more and more? Obviously you did. You went and got a BFA in graphic design, but did you start taking more art classes, or did you kind of drift away from it for a little while?
No, actually, I ended up taking 5 art classes in high school. So there were, you had art every year mm-hmm. for, you could kind of, what do they call it? Just like
electives.
Yeah. That's what I was looking for. you had electives. So my electives were always art. And so what was interesting is my art teacher, my freshman year of high school. So I had art very first period, freshman year of high school, and my art teacher, that was her first day of teaching as well. That wasn't her, student teaching. What do they call that? Not substitute, but you know what I'm talking about? They have like a proper word for it. Anyway.
I can't think of the word though.
Yeah. It's totally slipped my mind. It's real easy too, because my roommate was even a teacher. I can't believe I think of that. But it was her first day teaching, right? So she was pretty young. I mean, I would say, if I had to guess, she's probably 22, 23 years old.
Sure.
And, I'm like 14 or whatever. So she was young, and, I hit it off with her as far as like personality wise, and just kind of, she was into like cool music and stuff like that. And I just thought she was cool because she was the first young teacher I ever had, really. Sure. It's subjective, because I'm sure there were other teachers that were in their upper 20s or whatever. I mean, I'm 33 now, so I'm like young. It's like I would have seen myself as ancient, I guess. But so I really liked her. I liked her style of teaching, and I just got deeper and deeper into art. And so my sort of intersection with sport, in that I was always an athlete, but I was always like a weird art kid too. It was kind of like this. I've never really been 100% able to kind of pick a demographic or a group and just like be happy and fit in. What I'm saying? It's kind of like, oh, with the art kids, I'm the athlete. And then with the athletes, I'm the art kid. It's always kind of like, you're always still kind of like the outcast a little bit, but there's certain things where you cross over. Mm-hmm. So what I found, I had always subscribed to this magazine called Slam Magazine, which is a basketball magazine that I think it like someone got it to me as like a, it was like a gift exchange in like a church function, youth function or something. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. And they put out an issue one time called Kicks, and it was totally about sneakers. And, uh-huh. and I guess just being a basketball player, there's kind of like this weird natural sort of love affair that you, I guess, end up getting. A lot of basketball players, it seems, tend to have this, just liking sneakers. And being an artistic person, I sort of started looking at them in their sort of form as well, and being like, this is really cool. And Slam had done a feature on this guy who I don't remember who he was today. I know it wasn't Tinker Hatfield, who's like legendary as far as sneaker design, but it was about this guy whose job was to design sneakers. And I thought, man, that is the coolest job in the world. That is what I want to do. And so, so I ended up going to a small university that's fairly close to mine. I mentioned it earlier, about 20 minutes south of Lexington. And it was about 45 minutes from my home. And they didn't have, so the program that you needed to get into in order to do that was called industrial design, right? Because you're creating a physical product. And the closest thing they had to it was graphic design. So I thought, okay, well, That sounds like the next best thing. It's got the word design in it. So I ended up choosing that. And then luckily for me, I ended up falling in love with it. And then, you know, now kind of design itself is one of those words that it's just so broad. So you can kind of go any path you want.
Yeah. Well, and you've got all the product guys that are, you know, adding more and more words to design nowadays too. So it's, you know.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah,
product UI designer, UX like what, design, you know. Visual designer.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I always joke graphic designers. I always joke and say that visual design is like now the new cool word for graphic design because when we were younger it was like you're a graphic designer, and now like the cool like graphic design became like this old person word or something. And now it's got to be called visual design, even though it's a lot of times it's technically the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at something the other day and they had a job description with the thing. It was an article about, I don't even remember what it was about, but they had a job description for visual designer. I was like, okay, it's just a graphic designer.
Yeah. Well, what's even worse is I've heard like just the word like visual art used, and I'm like, visual art? Like, I don't know. I guess it maybe makes more sense for visual art because you have like performance arts and stuff like that.
Sure. I mean, I get that. I don't know. The whole art is subjective. Design is objective, though.
Right, right. Yeah. But yeah, so my degree was, it was an art degree. So I took all your regular art classes. And when I actually went to school, that was flat out, that was my major, is I was an art major.
Sure.
And I was getting a BA in art. And then I, my first semester discovered there was this baseball player in one of my first classes, and he was like, you should do graphic design, man. And I was like, what is that? He was like, cause he was telling me that he wanted to design sneakers too. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. So I went and basically redeclared, I guess it's more of a specialization thing where you get like a BFA in graphic design, or you can get a BFA in like sculpture or painting
it's
or whatever.
And so
I ended up
major.
Clarifying. Yeah. Right. 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 So I ended up clarifying my major's graphic design, and that sort of, you know, happy accident, I guess, led me up to where we are.
Yeah. So when you get out of school, what do you end up doing? Do you go out on your own right away, or do you go work for somebody and kind of learn the ropes?
Yeah. So I did not go on my own right away. And actually, I wouldn't even say that was ever even a dream or goal of mine initially, because I didn't really come from a family of entrepreneurs. I mean, my father worked, you know, he's just the type that you go to work somewhere and you stay there, right? And it's a loyalty thing, and they take care of you, you take care of them. I come from a blue collar family. My mom worked in our school system as like an attendance person for many years in elementary school, retired there. So I didn't really have that, hey, go start a business mentality.
Sure.
So my first job out of school, I interviewed at, I think it was like five or six different places. And a lot of them were up in Cincinnati. So just from a regional perspective, Lexington, Kentucky is like an hour. It's like an hour or an hour, 15 minutes, depending on how fast you drive south of Cincinnati. Right. So a lot of people in this region end up going to Cincinnati because there's a really good design scene there. You got P&G, big packaging scene. So I went up there, interviewed a couple places, didn't get a job. actually interviewed at this agency, and so one way that we were so familiar with Cincinnati is we had we would go and present our senior year in the student AIGA Cincinnati, like student portfolio review or whatever. So we would go up there. There'd be a bunch of art schools. So that's how we were kind of familiar with that scene. And I ended up getting an interview from a recruiter who was there reviewing portfolios, went to the place, and then the guy was like, he was like, I think you need to go back to like a portfolio school or something like that. So he totally just like crapped on me and my work. And
after
I was like, okay.
You?
Yeah. I was like, you guys invited me up here. This is a very odd scenario.
Yeah, nice of him.
So I ended up getting an interview at this place in Lexington called Host Communications. And I was familiar with it just because being a University of Kentucky basketball fan, the radio broadcasts, you would always hear, welcome to the Big Blue, whatever, and Host Communications and the Big Blue Network. And so I was like, oh, I think this is like a radio place. I didn't really know what it was. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going there, getting an interview. And then it was like this whole world opened up before my eyes. And I saw that they were doing stuff for Florida State and Texas and Georgia and the SEC, NCAA, and all of these college athletics powerhouses basically for around the country. And I had no clue that this is what they did. And so I ended up getting the job there, and I was designing game programs, like the covers and the inside covers and a couple features within the programs. Sure. And then like schedule cards that you see like in McDonald's or whatever, and schedule posters. And then sometimes you'd have to crank out a logo for like, say, a specialty game or whatever. So it's like, oh, Kentucky's playing Tennessee this weekend and it's sponsored by AT&T or whatever. And so you might crank out something like that, or just some pitch stuff. Some of that was pitch stuff for like sponsorship related sure. opportunities. Because sure. in the end, the way that this company made their money was they essentially were a sponsorship company. They would go. And so when I was mentioning, hey, this is Host Communications and the Big Blue Sports Network, basically they pay millions of dollars to the university and athletic program, and the athletic program gets that guaranteed money right up front. And then whatever the sponsorship company sells, they get to keep. So they're the ones that are really why college athletics, I guess, is such like an insane business. But later that company ended up being purchased by a company called IMG, which is,
I'm familiar
which
with
is why, yeah. So now I typically just say, oh, I worked at, like at the time IMG, and there's this sort of industry publication called the Sports Business Journal. Sure. And it's kind of like the Wall Street Journal of the sports business. And so usually they would rank like, these are the top best sports marketing companies in the country. And Host was always ranked number three behind IMG and then Octagon Sports. And both of those were kind of like, you know, it's almost like the Jerry Maguire movie. Like they had actual agents and stuff, and they didn't have any college mm-hmm. sports divisions. And so what they ended up doing was acquiring IMG and making them IMG College. So that happened
gotcha.
like literally 6 months or so after I left. So I ended up just saying, hey, I worked for IMG College. It's just easier than going through the whole, well, I worked for this one company and then they were acquired and whatever. So yeah,
that we just,
so that was my first gig.
Gotcha. So when you went to work for them, had you even thought about like doing sports branding stuff?
No, I did not. I mean, I didn't even realize that sports design and I knew that sports design was a thing through like designing sneakers, like we were discussing earlier, but I didn't realize that there was actual like sports graphic design.
Sure.
And it's funny, I think I was reading, it was like Print Magazine or something, and I read about, I think it was Joe Bosak, who spoke at Creative South, I think in year two, and usually comes down. And he's like a pioneer in the sports branding landscape. And then I was like, man, this is a real thing. That's cool. I didn't know that this existed. So, but also just working at that particular place, I got to see a lot of, just like make a lot of connections. Mm-hmm. And see what else was out there in the sports business, because a lot of these people would go on and go work for these other major sports properties.
Sure.
And, you know, like sometimes that would be Nike or whatever, but there were a lot of them were on the business end too. And I've always been, once I got serious about design, I'll say, because, you know, I lived I guess maybe a typical college life where I was just like, hey, like having fun, not really paying that much attention to my school. And then my senior year, what happened was my junior year, I went to observe that portfolio thing in the spring. And then that's when I was like, whoa, this is pretty cool. There's like a whole industry, advertising agencies and design firms. Like I'm glad that I picked this. I actually like this. So my senior year, I got really serious and subscribed to like Print Magazine and How, and started reading a little more. And so I basically sort of poured gasoline into like the passion. And, so when I was at IMG, it was a very beaten down kind of place. I mean, the designers there were talented, but it was like they had been there for years. And it was kind of scary, because someone actually opened my eyes to this. I can't remember who it was, but they pointed out and they said, look around at all these people here and you'll notice a lot of people that are middle-aged and they have no family, no kids, no spouses, and they're all driving like 92 Camrys or whatever. And it was like, you know, I'm not one to like look at what someone drives and judge like their success, because I've read actually in a book once that millionaires tend to drive like old F-150s, Ford F-150s. But you know, there was kind of a weird pattern there where I'm like, man, these people work all the time and they have no life. And so there just wasn't a lot of room to move up. And like my next role was going to be a creative director. Like mm-hmm. that's the highest position you could attain there. And my creative director ended up getting let go. And then they decided not to hire another one. And they just bumped us all underneath the editorial group. And so literally it was the highest I could go. There was no ladder. There was no path. So,
so you had capped out at that point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I could, and plus like it was kind of, it's very cyclical, the work. So it was like the new seasons were popping up and I was getting ready to start doing the same stuff again. And it was also tough because you would be working on these publications and you would have like six different editors you're working with.
Sure.
And each one of them thought their project was the most important.
Generally,
and
how
the
it
way
goes.
That their boss, yeah, the way that their boss was pushing us, the director of publishing would push them to push us. And it was frustrating, man. I'm not gonna lie. Like that place, like the atmosphere was insane. And I eventually, I was getting very frustrated. Mm-hmm. And so eventually I had, there was something that it was like an in-house magazine we were making for one of the associations, like some coaches association or something. And like I had spelled the CEO's name wrong in one of those in the publication. And this thing goes through like six different editors and nobody caught it. And so I remember the CEO was like, oh, big deal. This thing comes out yearly as long as the clients or this month or this thing comes out quarterly, as long as the client is satisfied. Like, I don't care if my name's spelled right. Like, it doesn't bother me, which was cool. Like on his part, but it became like the design group had gotten, everyone was really frustrated and it kind of caused like this major argument of like, it was just like a lot of, I can't remember exactly what went down, but there was like basically a big argument between like everyone in the design group. and I just remember being like, I'm out of here, man. I'm done. And so I went home and I was just like, I'm coming back and I'm putting in my 2 weeks and I have no clue what I'm going to do next. And so I came back, I put in my 2 weeks and I knew that there was a tendency to try to convince people to stay. Mm-hmm. So I just made it up and said, I'm going to freelance. And that way I could sort of make up and say, well, this is my dream. You guys can't change my dream. And then hopefully they'll understand and won't try to convince me to stay, which they still did anyway, try to convince me to move to like the web group or whatever. But I was like, no, I'm pretty dead set on doing this. And so then they sent out this massive email to like the whole, like there's like 250 employees or whatever. And they're like, we wish Adam good luck because he goes and starts his own business and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, crap, now I have to really start my own business because
don't want egg on my face when people, I
don't. Yeah, exactly. So I had been doing some work. I landed an internship my senior year of college with this small boutique advertising agency doing like car ads and some little local restaurant stuff or whatever. Sure. Working underneath this graphic designer who was just amazing. It was this girl. Her name was Yoshika Azuma, and she was Japanese. And she went to Virginia Commonwealth, which is obviously a great school for design. So I learned a ton underneath her. And the reason why she ended up where she was at was because her American, her English accent wasn't that great. It was very hard to understand her. You kind of had to be around her for a while.
Sure.
To really kind of pick up what she was saying. I think that scared off some people in hiring, because all of her classmates were at like MTV and all these places. And she totally could have been there. She was talented enough to be there, but I think it was just people couldn't hardly understand what she was saying, which was tough for me too. My first 2 weeks with her, I couldn't understand what she was saying either, but then you kind of pick it up, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of like when you have a kid and they have certain words for things, you know how it is. You just get around people. Yeah. But anyway, so I really looked at her as a mentor, learned a lot from her. And so she ended up leaving, going to a design firm. And that particular company I did the internship with, I ended up picking them up for freelance. And so I was, because they never hired another designer, it was a car dealership had started their own agency. And they ended up just keeping sort of media by people. Mm-hmm. But they just ended up not hiring another designer. So they just used me for freelance. So I did have one client when I quit. And it was them, but it was not enough to really sort of sustain anything at all. And I was dating my wife then, my now wife. I was dating her then,
Sure.
And so we quit, but we weren't getting engaged anytime soon or anything like that. So there wasn't, I kind of lucked out in that I didn't have like any crazy bills or anything. It was like, well, I just, you know, as long as I can pay for a couple meals here and there, I should be okay. I don't have any crazy, crazy expenses. So I ended up freelancing, and my first year, man, I mean, it was like poverty stricken. I think I made like $18,000 or something, but you know, at the same time, I mean, I didn't really have a whole lot I needed to pay for either.
Sure.
So then the next year, like it doubled, and then it just kind of kept going up from there. And I ended up doing it for 6 years, full time freelancing, just kind of like by accident. And, throughout that time period, I want to say maybe 3 years in, I went and actually interviewed at HAL Magazine.
Oh, really?
And they were hiring somebody for like a publication design thing. And I ended up, but it was actually, it wasn't actually like publication design. It was designing like the marketing materials for like the conference, the HAL conference, and
oh, okay.
Doing like some advertising work and stuff. Like you weren't actually laying out the magazine, but it was still cool. It's still at HAL, you know, and that's based in Cincinnati, which I don't think a lot of people know that either. Mm-hmm. So I ended up, they ended up, well, the way the lady told me was I went and interviewed there. Things seemed to be pretty cool. And then they told me that they just like didn't just sort of ended up disbanding that department. Oh, I don't geez. Know if it was like the, well, she was the only one there. It was like her and like another designer. So she may have went and did something else mm-hmm. in HAL, or that maybe they just decided like, hey, you don't need help, which seems to be what happens in a lot of big corporations when someone's grinding it out for a while and they're like, hey, you know what? You've been handling this workload. So we're going to let you keep it and not hire anybody else. But, you know, so I wasn't against working anywhere, but I just never found that perfect place. And I just kept grinding it out for 6 years and ended up at a place or when I was 29, I'd been freelancing full time for 6 years. By that time I'd had, you know, gotten married, had two kids. So there was sort of that whole, I missed out on that whole, I'm afraid to freelance because I have kids thing.
Right.
You know, cause I just like really experienced it while I was doing it. So it wasn't as scary for me.
Sure.
And then, so I got approached by this digital agency in Lexington and they were like, hey, why don't you, I knew the guy who'd been, we'd, you know, had drinks together and just kind of knew him from around town. And he was like, hey, we're thinking about hiring, our designer just left. We're thinking about hiring another one. And I was like, well, I actually don't want to do that. I'd rather be more leadership. I don't want to be just somebody's graphic designer. And he was like, well, you actually wanted to make this a leadership role and have him be a creative director. So I ended up taking a job at this digital agency. And honestly, like what happened was I just, once I had already tasted freedom, it was very, very hard to go work for somebody else.
Sure. I can imagine.
And yeah. So I was there for about a year and a half, learned a lot, got to hang with some cool people, but about halfway through, I was just miserable. And I wrote this blog post, which, if you want to put it in the show notes or whatever, I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
But it was basically like, I'm leaving, you know, halfway through, I was like depressed and really sort of hating my life and just feeling I wasn't going anywhere. And so I left again. And that is sort of like the, I guess, kind of like a reinvention of myself and my career. And that was when I went 100% into sports. Before this, I wasn't doing 100% sports work. I was doing those 6 years of freelance. I was probably doing like maybe 15 to 20% sports work, but I was still doing a lot of stuff for other industries. I mean, I was designing a magazine for this asphalt industry thing.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, no kidding. There was just a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, there's a lot of little blue collar industries that I was working with. And, mm-hmm. and when I left there, I just thought, man, this is what I want to do. I've been away from it long enough to not be so burnt out, and the technologies have changed and so there's a lot more projects and stuff there. So this was the end of 2014. I quit there. And, so another thing that happened was I was actually living in Lexington at the time.
Sure.
And me and my wife ended up deciding we wanted to move out to the country. And so like, if anyone's familiar with the landscape and where Lexington is, it's basically surrounded by multi-million dollar horse farms. So
that's an understatement.
Yeah. So if you want to move out to the country, you either have to live like have the means to purchase one of these multi-million dollar horse farms, or you have to go further out, you know? Yeah. So we ended up just going further out. And then, so what happened was it just made sense to go further out to where I grew up. Because it was like, if we're going to move 40 minutes away from Lexington, we might as well go 40 minutes in the direction where my parents can be there to help with our kids. And, you know, my grandparents were still alive at the time and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So we ended up moving back over to, out in the country where I grew up. And so then I was having to drive downtown Lexington every day. So that obviously added to, you know, things being crappy. Yeah. Especially when it was a rough winter that year. So it was like crazy snow all the time that year. And living out in the country, I mean, they don't come out and salt these roads or whatever. So no, yeah,
they
that
definitely
was,
don't. Having exactly. lived in Kentucky, I'm well aware.
Right.
Half
so that
inch
was
of
interesting.
Snow still stops y'all.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, it's like anywhere else. I mean, it's kind of funny because Kentucky's one of those states where it's the deep South considers us the North and the North considers us the South. And we're just like stuck in the middle of like, we don't know who we are because we're not really culturally, we're not Midwestern, but geographically we're not necessarily Southern.
No,
so it's
you're
a
just
weird
kind of there.
Yeah. It's a totally in between kind of state. And then there's been a lot of surveys and most people identify with Southern culture in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. But there actually is a pretty hard line. I think if you talk to most people, once you cross the Ohio River from Northern Kentucky into Cincinnati, there's a pretty hard line culturally there. And I don't know why that hasn't blurred over time, but it's still pretty hard line. Like south of the river, people hardcore identify with being like a Southerner, and then north of the river, people identify with being from the North. So it's kind of a weird place. But yeah, we have four seasons. We're probably the only Southern state that has four like legitimate seasons.
Yeah, this is true. So thankfully,
how long were you here? How long were you in Kentucky?
3.5-4 years. So we moved to Kentucky the last like 6 weeks of my eighth grade year. And then we moved out after the first quarter of my senior year.
Gotcha. And you went back, you went to Alabama? Is that after?
No, we moved to Augusta, Georgia, actually.
Oh,
so
okay.
We moved from. Excuse me. We moved from Orlando, Florida to Central Kentucky. That was, you know, great for a teenage kid, a small town of less than 10,000 people. That's 80 miles, literally 80 miles from Louisville, 80 miles from Lexington, 80 miles from Bowling Green. So I was the new kid for the entire time. And since I was kind of nerdy and didn't do football or baseball, I didn't fit in. I was the kid on the swim team. So, you know, shaving your legs twice a year doesn't add to your cool factor when you're in high school.
I can imagine. I actually did have a buddy who there was a guy I went to high school with who was a hardcore swimmer, mm-hmm. and he was actually Ryan Lochte's roommate at Florida.
Oh, geez. So, you know, kind of getting back on track. So you leave this firm. And go strike back out on your own. At what mm-hmm. point do you start the podcast? Had you started it at that point or?
I had not, but I had announced that I was going to start a podcast and I didn't know what it was going to be yet. And mainly it was, hey, you know what? I listen to a ton of podcasts and I always have. I mean, ever since I think the first podcast I ever listened to was like a design podcast that I discovered from like How Design Conference in like 2006. And, so I was like, I want a side project. I don't, you know, this is, sounds like a good one to approach, do a podcast. And also thought, hey man, I really like sitting down with people and chatting with them about their career in design. Sure. So I knew it was going to be geared towards design. I just didn't know that it was going to be geared towards sport and design. And after a while I thought, man, this is a particular podcast that I've been looking for a long time. That's never really existed. And so I thought, man, who better to do it? I'll just do it. And just kind of jumped out on a limb. And so I was actually very fortunate. My last, when I left this company, I basically told them I was leaving at the end of January. And they were like, well, stick with us through the end of March so we can find a replacement. And so in February, I worked full time there. Mm-hmm. And then in March, I scaled back to 20 hours a week. So they could get used to me not being there. And so I took the rest of that time and started. So by that time I decided, hey, like I knew what it was going to be. And so I took the rest of that time and started building out the website for Makers of Sport and the logo. Mm-hmm. And, then in, I think it was April, I launched like a 15-minute, just basically rant, episode zero. I didn't write anything down, and I just like got on them. I was like, let's see if I can talk for 15 minutes. And it was miserable. I mean, I go back and listen to it now, and I think I started repeating myself about 7 minutes and just said the same exact thing that I said the first 7 minutes.
I've never done that at all.
Yeah. So that's where that started. And then, you know, I knew Joe Bosak, who I was mentioning earlier, who was kind of a vital guy that sort of I saw and pointed me in the direction of sport. And sure. I had actually gotten Joe a few years back to come speak to AAF Lexington. I was involved with AAF. There was not an AIGA chapter here, mm-hmm. but the AAF was fairly design centric. And so I had gotten Joe to come speak. So I had met Joe and knew Joe. And I also had actually met Todd Radom. He went and spoke in Louisville one time. Mm-hmm. And Todd is another guy he's at Creative South a lot. And he was on the first like heavy hitters panel, which is like a sports design panel.
Right.
And so Todd spoke in Louisville at this thing called the Louisville Graphic Design Association, which is now AIGA Louisville. Mm-hmm. But for like 30 years, it was the Louisville Graphic Design Association. I don't know why they why it took so long to be that, because they had huge attendance. But anyway, so Todd came and spoke to that. I went and met Todd, talked to him. So I knew Todd as well, just enough to like shoot him an email. Sure. I mean, I wouldn't say we were like friends. So I shot those guys both an email and I was like, here's my idea. What do you guys think about coming on and being a guest? And so I got a friend of mine who used to work at IMG, and now he had switched from being a full-time designer to a full-time freelance photographer. And he was shooting, leveraging his sports connections that he made from ING to shoot for like Sports Illustrated. And he shot the McDonald's All-American game, which is a high school basketball all-star game.
Right.
And so he came on my first episode, and I wanted to get someone that I was really familiar with because I knew that we were going to mess up, you know? and so I was very thankful for him. Yeah. And his name's Matt Hernandez, and he came on my first episode, and I'm super glad that he came on. And then so episode two was Joe Bosak, and then episode three was Todd Radom. And then by that point, I had started to get like Twitter followers. You know, people were starting to follow me on Twitter, mm-hmm. on the podcast account, and I started to see other people. And I knew people in sport over the years. And sure. So I was like, hey, you want to come aboard? And then like anything else, once you stick with something, I mean, it just kind of starts to snowball, mm-hmm. and you meet other people. And what's cool is we just live in a time period where very interesting things are happening in the world of sport and technology. So I'm seeing things every day where, you know, the Dodgers are doing this and somebody else is doing that. And Nike just launched this thing and Under Armour bought this tech company. And so there's no lack of resources to tap into, because every single week I'm seeing things and I'm like, oh, it'd be really cool to talk to somebody that's doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the interesting things about it, because I'm by no means am I a sports guy. I fully, you know, I can appreciate it. I don't mind watching a game every now and then, but sports just aren't really my thing. But mm-hmm. what I've liked about your podcast is it's a design podcast that just happens to involve sports. It's not a sports podcast that is about design. I mean, it can be, but
yeah. I mean, we definitely talk about high level design concepts, like that, you know, cause I'm just a design, passionate designer. I mean, I could be designing in healthcare and still pay attention to, I mean, I'm still paying attention to what's going on in comm arts and, you know, like what won the Addies, the national Addies or Clio's, whatever, these types of things. So I still tap into all of those resources for inspiration and seeing like who's doing what. And there are big firms that are working in sport that are just general design firms. I mean, a lot of people probably don't know that Pentagram designed the Big Ten logo.
That was or the
New York
mention.
Jets logo. Yeah. I mean, so there are people that are doing that type of work. And I think for many years it was, we talk about it a lot on the show, especially when you get some of the veterans like Todd and Joe, where they mentioned that there was a time where there was almost like a design snob mentality where some of the quote unquote highbrow firms were looking at sport like, oh, why would you want to do that kind of work? But then what happened was, I think that sport, people started to realize that sport is like very closely tied in just to culture. Mm-hmm. And that to me, what I found over time is that's what interests me the most. So just like all the things that happen around sport are what I'm really interested in. And then like actually what ends up happening on the field or on the court is like not even that interesting to me anymore.
So, well, yeah, I mean, so that's something that I've noticed with your podcast in general is all the ancillary things that you talk about that are tied in with it. But, you know, your podcast crosses over into so many different things, whether it be, you know, the, oh no, I just completely forgot on it. The venture capital stuff that's going on with, mm-hmm. you know, teams.
Oh, like the Dodgers Accelerator. Yeah,
thank you. That's yeah. the one I was thinking of. And mm-hmm. we just talked about yeah. it and I was, had a brain fart.
Right.
That, or, you know, you've got, you know, or you see like Kobe Bryant now where he's, you know, getting in on the venture capital game and
right,
things
right.
like that. So it's always interesting to see where all these tangential things cross over into the world of sport and then lead out. So, but
right.
You know, so that's one of those things that for me has always drawn me in because I'm well aware that I'm pretty nerdy. So that has made it.
Well, and one thing that we, I never want the show to ever come across as like some jock show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's definitely
like
not
I really
a
want it
show.
To be a. Yeah, I don't want it to be that at all. I want it to be a high level, intelligent conversation because there are a lot of people that are doing work in the sports industry that do come across like that. It's very unfortunate, and not just in design. I'm just saying in the sports business in general. it can be a very bro type industry.
A lot of testosterone.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, sometimes you may have people that are doing things in sport that just never were good at sports. And so they sort of take all their like aggression out on like the business side of sport because they want to be tapped into that industry in some way. But there's like this whole Instagram culture of these kids making these things that they're calling edits. And they basically just take some like picture that they jack off of like ESPN or whatever and use their phones and sort of do like some high pass filter and make these crazy images. And it's like this whole culture of like 15-year-olds that are doing this. And so those kids
run through Nashville seven times and then
yeah, exactly.
Blur on it.
Right. So those kids, I admire that they are sitting and making things as you know, their age. Cause I didn't necessarily do that when I was their age, but those aren't the people that I want to have on the show. I really want to have a very high level conversation. And that's one of the things that, sometimes if someone comes in, because I'm a very passionate reader, I read a ton and I read a ton of different things. I mean, I just finished up a book called Ready Player One, which is about, it's a fiction book about virtual reality and this guy mm-hmm. creates this game. It's super awesome. You should check it out. Cause it's got a ton of, it's basically this game developer was a child of the '80s and he made this whole virtual reality world based on like '80s, like pop culture. Mm-hmm. So
you're like it's the second like, or third person that I've talked to, that has mentioned that I need to read that book. So
you got to read it
done. Put it in my Audible queue.
Yep, and that's what I did. The Audible book is really good. The guy puts on a pretty good performance. So I just finished that up, and before that, I did A Song of Ice and Fire, which is all the you know the Game of Thrones books. Mm-hmm. so I try to go back and forth between fiction and nonfiction. I buy a ton of design books, but I don't necessarily read them. A lot of times I'll just buy for inspiration, like Coffee Table. And it's weird because a lot of times like they'll be like, thing. I'll notice I've been getting into sort of like Coffee Table books on architecture. And I have no desire to be an architect, but there's just something really cool about flipping through those things. And, you know, the only words in them are like the foreword of the book and then just captions of the work.
You know, you need to worry when you pick up the subscription to Dwell magazine, just so you can look.
Fancy. Yeah, no, I've totally thought about doing Dwell too. Like that's one of those that I end up picking up, like if we're at the beach or whatever. And I'm just like, I need to get some magazines. I'll go in and usually get Dwell.
Yep. Me too. It's usually that and one about like beer making.
Yeah. But you know, I think the thing is that I've it's allowed me to develop like a curiosity in so many different things. And there's really kind of this mentality with me where I almost wish that we got more than one life to do these things, because sure. part of me is like, man, in another life, I want to be a 3D like animator. And then part of me is like, in another life, I want to just be a straight up like painter, you know, like a mm-hmm. Picasso painter. And then part of me is like, hey, you know, I want to, make like be an engineer type that sort of creates things with 3D printing or whatever. Like, I'm just very curious about all these different things. So hopefully I can push my kids to like experiment with different stuff and get them into some of that.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way, where if I had time and, or another life, I have about 5 or 6 different interests that like I'm really interested in that I would try to pursue.
So totally, man. Yeah. So, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of as the podcast moved along, at what point did you add in the halftime shows? Cause those are kind of separate. Those are about the business side of things.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think what episode number it was, but I was starting to get to the point where I felt like I was interviewing these people and I thought, man, am I building my own brand here, or am I just building other people's brands? And I mean, I'm not against that. Like, I totally wanted to give.
Sure.
But then part of me was like, hey man, I'm putting a lot of time here. Like, I feel like I need to kind of try to establish myself too. Cause sometimes I self-admittingly ask questions that I already know the answer to. I'm just trying to help the tell the story essentially. Cause that's really what a podcast ends up being in the, you know, yourself. I mean, you're trying to get the, you're trying to sort of guide the guests through their own story, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, so I had this idea to do these sort of, I called them halftime, and halftime is just a play on words between like halftime of like a basketball game or football game. They're usually 20 minutes mm-hmm. and the players go back, they take a 20 minute break and they come back from the locker room. So I wanted to really play on this whole idea of like a halftime speech. And so mm-hmm. I started to do these episodes that were really just about me taking what I've learned or even just read about and trying to learn over the years and positioning it in a way that, and using, I guess, like a sports context mm-hmm. almost, because like you could totally remove the sports context and it still fits as like freelance design business.
Sure.
But the only reason why I'm keeping the sports context is because it's coming out under the Makers of Sport umbrella.
That makes sense.
So, but I do have halftime.fm. So I thought, man, if I ever wanted to break that out and turn that into something else, I at least have a cool domain for it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to remember when it was, but you know, kind of getting back into your day job, the one that pays the bills more. Mm-hmm. When did you decide to move out from under, you know, using your own name to using Mountain & Co?
So episode 25, I had Joe Bosak, who's making a crazy amount of cameos on the show.
he's a good guy.
You'll have to get him. Yeah, you have to get him on here.
Oh, I need to.
He's a good one. So Joe, I had Joe come. Actually, I think Joe pitched me this idea. He was like, you should let me interview you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ah, man, people don't want to hear from me. Like, I don't really have an interesting story. Because I'm talking to people that are designing like Super Bowl logos and stuff, right? Sure. So it's there's no way that people want to hear from me. So he was like, no, we should do it. So we had this idea for this episode called The Interception Show. And so Joe was intercepting the mic and turning it back on me. So during that show, I had been toying with this idea of rebranding myself and my services, because I had worked under my own name my entire career.
Sure.
And I wanted to, because I had mentioned really kind of like niching down into like one specific vertical market, mm-hmm. I wanted to sort of rebrand myself for that. And so I was kind of basically working on trying to come up with something that I could rebrand myself to and really kind of start like a company, to where also like if I ever had some other people that got involved, I would be able to get more buy-in than say, hey, you're going to be doing all this work under A. Martin Design. You know,
yeah,
like
that
sounds like very awesome. Right. Like, yeah. So now it's like, it became a little more, I guess, anonymous because of the name. But, so but also still want to be tied into it in some way. So if you actually, because of where I'm from like, they consider where I live like the gateway to the Appalachian Mountains. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of like a whole, and I'm an eighth generation Kentuckian, like Eastern Kentuckian. So there's sort of a tie in with like the importance of mountains in my just history.
Sure.
And then also, if you actually remove a few letters from my last name, you get MTN. So it's always, it ends up always being abbreviated MTN mm-hmm. and co and company. So some people actually think that it's an abbreviation for my last name, like, oh, Martin and Company. And so maybe I didn't do a very good job actually branding myself, but, it's always an interesting conversation to have nonetheless. So one thing I wanted to do was do something completely different. Some of my favorite agencies that I follow, like I love the work of Huge Inc. in New York. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but they're a digital agency.
Yeah.
And then one of their founders left, but he was one of the original guys and grew to be like their global chief creative officer, whatever. His name's Joe Stewart. And he left and started a company called Work and Company. And I've always like had this, I always liked the idea of the word and company on the end of something because there's something sort of old school about it. Like, I don't know if it's like, it's almost feels a little blue collar. I don't know. It's a weird thing. I actually had like almost a 2-hour episode with this guy, Brian Lindstrom, about naming companies and how hard it is. So I wanted to challenge myself to do something different and I wanted to stand out completely different in the sports landscape. So I came in with this color yellow, this bright yellow, mm-hmm. and then this super bold serif typography. And that was basically going to be my new brand. Like I didn't want to do bevels and I didn't want to make it look like some sporty logo. I just wanted to be like, hey, when I pass out my business card at an event that's filled with sports related people, this one's going to look different. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that, I made that decision to do that and, you know, have like, you know, trusted confidants or whatever, pass it back and forth. And actually I talked to Bethany Heck a lot about it too, because we had become buddies, mm-hmm. Before the podcast. And then I had her come on the podcast. And, so she was there from, you know, the beginning, like when I was designing the logo and picking out a typeface, and actually ended up using a typeface that she is one of her favorites. So I have to attribute like Founders Grotesque, which is the logo typeface that I use, to Bethany. So thanks Bethany, if you listen to this, for turning me on to that Foundry. I think it's Klim Type Foundry. It's like KLIIM foundry.com. They make some good stuff. So, and then, you know, scary, man. I just did it. Like I got my site together and launched this thing. And so it's like, there's no turning back now because then like for weeks after I'm like, am I doing the right thing? Should I just do everything under my name or so now I just try to point everybody to that. And what's cool is I get to work with, I've always collaborated with people. Like there's a girl, I mean, I've had interns before and there's a girl who I sent some stuff to freelance to help me out, mm-hmm. who went to my school. And then there's a photographer I work with a lot. And so now I can kind of position everything under one hat for my particular clients.
Sure.
Which actually helps them because then I'm like, hey, we'll take care of this. And then they can, these, you know, collaborators can invoice me and there's sort of one point of payment contact for the client.
Well, yeah,
which works out.
Yeah, that's less scary for a client. So,
and then you can charge more money because you're basically like, yeah, we're an agency.
We're
not just one guy. It's like,
I don't think many of the clients are going to be listening to this podcast. So,
No, hopefully not.
No, no, too many.
But I am transparent with them. I basically tell them like, hey, you know, this is my company, but the whole reason why I added N Company is that I have a lot of trusted collaborators that I bring on that are, if they're fit for a particular project and, sure. and that's sort of how we do it. I try to tell them up front, I don't try to sort of like fool them, I guess, mm-hmm. into thinking that this is like some global design agency in like Madison Avenue in New York City or whatever. I'm like fully upfront, like, hey, this is basically a small design studio with some people that help out when needed, but I'm going to try and do all the work. That's the main thing.
Sure. So I know one of your big clients, or at least was one of your big clients. I should preface that. I don't know if they still are, mm-hmm. was a lacrosse team. How did you kind of hook up with them? Because lacrosse is not a big sport in Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird how I got into that world. So I had, because it's weird, like I've ranked for like at the time, I don't know if I still do or not, but I really don't know much about SEO. And I just to be like blunt, honest, I don't really care that much about it, which is probably sad. But, you know, I'm a creative. I mean, I like making things and whatever happens, happens, hopefully.
You can pay somebody to worry about that.
Yeah, yeah. But I ranked for like, if you search sports graphic designer at the time, like my one of my old sites ranked, and I guess they found me through that. And they were like, we're looking for a designer to give us priority. And you know, we want somebody that we can call up and say, hey, we just bought an ad in a publication or whatever. And we need something cranked out in like next 24 hours.
Sure.
And so I pitched them on this idea, and this was right after I left that job with that, that design agency. So I needed clients. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't really know exactly what I was going to do. I had a couple, you know, my wife and I, we'd bought a new house and we had basically doubled our size. So it was like our expenses were different, way different than before going in. So I pitched them on the idea of I tried to just be honest and hope that it worked out. And I was like, listen, if you're wanting somebody that's going to crank out stuff for you, like it's not what I want to do. But I was like, if you're looking for somebody that really wants to have conversations with you about sort of the strategic direction of the company, as far as like creativity and design is concerned, and almost mm-hmm. like a creative director role, then that's it'll be a good fit. And so they basically were like, well, we didn't even know that was like an option. that cause you know, these are sports people. Like the guy that I work with, he actually came from, he used to work for the NFL, the director of marketing I work with. But you know, so I came in and started working with them, and I still hate their corporate logo. I've been getting them to change it for so long. And I'm like embarrassed. I don't even want to like show it. I try not to use it as much as possible. Which is sad. But I basically was like, so I came in and was just basically blunt honest with them. Like I'd never really done that as, with clients before. I'd always been for the first 6 years I freelanced, I was almost kind of like, yes, sir, no, sir. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Like make the logo bigger. Okay. And this time I just, and then I, like when I was at that agency, I got a lot more aggressive too with clients because, sure. you know, it wasn't necessarily my money if the client ran away, so I could like take some risks. But I just got aggressive with them and was like, I don't think that's a good idea. And I think this is better. And we developed a relationship. I started off doing like, I want to say it was like 20 hours a month. Mm-hmm. And then now, we had a conversation the other day about bumping it up to like 100 hours a month. And like, I'm basically like their, like when I go to their events and stuff. And when I fly to their events, like their director of marketing, he actually introduces me as their creative director.
Oh, wow.
Which is cool. I mean, I've built a really good relationship with them. And so what they are is they're not a lacrosse team. So what they are is they're an events and training company. So they put on events around the country, like tournaments and showcases. And then And then they also have select teams, which are, like, so they have like 15 different regions. So you'll have, 3D Lacrosse Georgia, and they have a select team for 3D Lacrosse Georgia. And that's like, there's tryouts for that. And these kids, like the best kids make the team or whatever. And then those kids go around the country and play. And then they're really big on, there's a certain coaching style or methodology that their founder has. And I guess it's really unique to that sport. And so that is like the draw for these people, because mm-hmm. lacrosse has always been like an East Coast, especially like upper East Coast sport.
Yeah.
And a few, like 2 years ago. So this company's headquartered in Denver, and 2 years ago, the, University of Denver men's lacrosse team won the national championship, the NCAA Division I national championship. And it was the first time a team that was a first time a team west of Chapel Hill, North Carolina had ever won it, which is insane if you think about how far east Chapel Hill, North Carolina is.
Yes, yeah.
And so people were basically like, what's happening out here? Like something's happening out there and we got to go see what it is. So people were all like trying to figure out what's going on with like the style of play that they're teaching. And so what was cool is I always thought lacrosse was, and it was for a long time. It's changing now, the landscape's changing, but for a long time it was kind of a private school WASP-y sport. Mm-hmm. But it actually has a really cool history. Like lacrosse was founded by Native Americans, and in some instances, so I've really been trying to draw out some of that in some of our work. Where basically, I mean, one time there was a thing where we used a word Onondaga, I think it's Onondaga is the name of the tribe, and they're up in upstate New York and kind of by the Canada border, and. Okay. And actually, this particular tribe, I think one of the guys told me that the people that are in what is that recent Leonardo DiCaprio movie?
Revenant.
Yeah, I think those people are actually Onondaga. Like that's their tribe. Huh. Like the actual actors, that's where they're actually from, that tribe. And so, so we've been trying to really pull some of that out, like some of that history out, and using words like for Thanksgiving last year, we did an image for we used the word from their tribe for the word lacrosse, which basically it means different things in different tribes. And I think their tribe was like Little War is what it stood for. Mm-hmm. And so this is like Native Americans would use lacrosse to settle disputes like years ago. They yep. wouldn't actually, it was like, hey, let's play a lacrosse game and let's not actually like kill each other. So they that's where it kind of came from. And then there were these two Frenchmen that came over and discovered it and sort of like, you know, took credit for it or whatever. And that's how the game grew.
Town in Wisconsin named after them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Same people.
But, no, actually, is it? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, it is. I grew up in Minnesota. I remember that's like the only thing I remember from like seventh or eighth grade history.
Gotcha. So, you know, that actually has really sort of fed the podcast too, because what it caused me to do was to get outside of football and basketball. Sure. And, you know, for so many years, it was all I cared about was football and basketball. And then now I'm looking at these other sports and paying attention culturally to what's happening and paying attention to design, the design that's happening in that world. And actually, so Nike ended up signing these three brothers. They're called the Thompson brothers. These three Native American brothers who are from that tribe that I was discussing up in upstate New York. And these guys are just like killer lacrosse players. And they have, all of them have this really long braid that goes down their back. And it's really cool. And their logo actually is like the T. It's like a T, and the top of the T is like a mohawk, and the bottom of the T is like the braid.
Oh, neat.
It's like, yeah, they've really sort of played into that. So, you know, it's a growing sport, and now it's weird. It's almost like there's like a niche within a niche kind of thing. Cause now I'm getting these lacrosse companies hitting me up being like, hey, we're seeing what you're doing for 3D lacrosse. Like, why don't you come and do some stuff for us? And now I have to sort of weigh, is it worth, you know, like the kind of loyalty thing? Because what I found is that this is the deepest relationship I've ever had with the client. And I love the people that I'm working with. I mean, we have it would be really, cause I think one day I don't want to work with clients. I think that's like everybody's goal as a designer is like, you want to make your own stuff. but it would be really hard to leave these people behind because I really do enjoy working with them. And I think when you do that, you are a little more lenient on things. I mean, you pick your battles.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be like a hard ass and be like, oh, like you asked for one more revision. I'm not going to give that to you or whatever. It's like, nah, dude, I'll crank it out. Cause, you know, whatever, you guys are like, I actually like working with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've got a strong relationship, you'll bend over backwards to help somebody out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what, you know, and really that's what podcasting is. Because what you're doing is you're developing these relationships with all these people. And if you're genuine about it, and I know that you are, cause I always listen to the show, it's a very intangible thing. Like it's hard to, I remember for 2 years, I didn't ask for a single dime or basically ask for anything from listeners except for asking them to leave a review if they like the show. And then, but I remember people being like, well, what do you get out of that? And it was, I never could point to one thing and say, oh, well, it led to this or whatever. But it's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's like this weird karma thing or what, but it's just like things add up and relationships add up and people introduce you and you meet other people. And if you're genuine, I mean, we live in a world where I think there's a lot of people that aren't genuine, but the digital media, especially seeing how people interact online. Exactly. you know, social media really kind of, you can get to, you can see if someone is being transparent or not. Like over time, sure. You can sort of see a pattern, right? And they're like, oh, that's not a real person. And I just try to be exactly what you see is what you get in every aspect of me, whether that's a podcast, whether that's the design studio or social media.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think that shows in the fact that, you know, you've been doing the podcast for 3 years now.
Doing the math. Yeah, I think it will almost be, March will be 3 years. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So almost 3 years now. And, mm-hmm. you know, you've gone from just having a podcast to there's an entire community that's based around it. And,
yeah.
you know, the amount of connections that you've made, not just within the industry of sports design, but just in general.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, man, it's led to a lot of opportunities. I mean, just like getting to go and, you know, see locker rooms of cool sports teams or mm-hmm. being invited to be a speaker at a conference that's for in-house creatives in the MLB. You know, these are things that I never would have been able to do this without this podcast. I mean, the work itself wasn't going to take me in that direction.
Sure. So,
but you know, the thing is like, every single day, I mean, I still wake up and I'm like, I feel like that this is not that big of a deal. Like, there's still every single day I'm like, why? I these people should not be talking to me. I'm like just in awe. And I'm like, I shouldn't even be doing this. I should be like a construction worker or something. Like I still struggle with all that, man. And now and kind of in a weird roundabout way, like I was mentioning Slam Magazine earlier, like I actually got work from them this past year and I did work, like a LeBron feature. And it's like, and I still am like, you know, basically I'm a crappy designer and podcaster and, like, you know, need to go do something else.
I'm glad to see that everybody suffers from that imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually I did a halftime on that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's crazy. Like, I mean, Chris Martin from Coldplay suffers from it. Like I think that if you don't have some form of it, like you're probably just a narcissist.
Now you're talking about Kanye.
Yeah. Oh, good old Kanye. We could have a whole podcast about him.
Cool. Well, kind of getting close to wrapping up here. You know, what do you see the future for both, you know, you professionally and with the podcast? Not that the podcast isn't professional, but you know what I mean by that.
Yeah. I mean, so professionally, obviously I'm going to keep doing the design studio, to, you know, as long as that pays the bills, I'll keep doing that. And then hopefully one day Makers of Sport it's making money now, which is awesome, but mm-hmm. it's not, you know, I can't necessarily quit doing client work yet, but it's doing well enough to where I can like buy some equipment and stuff like that and not have to like just take everything that I make for my designs so you're on board into the podcast
where you have the luxury to buy a microphone and then not use it for months.
Yes, exactly. Like we're talking about for a show, it's all this equipment that's sitting here that I just haven't hooked up yet. But you know, I want to, so one thing with this show and just like caring about branding is I've really tried to push Makers of Sport as a brand. And there's like, mm-hmm. So there's a Twitter account. I'm always sharing things that I find interesting in the world of sport. I'm really trying to engage with people on that and make it its own thing. And then I'm doing like these Snapchat takeovers now where I had a girl who's in the community. She's a graphic designer for the Indianapolis Colts, and she took over the Snapchat account for a day and just gave some behind the scenes. So I'm really trying to find like these other avenues of just doing interesting things with the show. And mm-hmm. and like the podcast is always going to be the number one product, but you know, I want to maybe make some merch eventually, design some t-shirts, some posters with quotes or whatever. And I've always kind of had this idea of getting the interviews, because I have like this crazy love for like publication design, even though I don't do a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to get the interviews transcribed and design like a book or something.
Yeah. I've been looking at getting the transcription thing done. It's tough finding a service that is reliable and is not going to kill you.
And that's the thing too, is I don't actually want, because I've already done the interviews, I don't actually want to read it. Right. You know, yeah. Like I want to get someone else to read it and edit it. It's like, hey, get these interviews transcribed, but I don't really want to read through this because I already know what this says. Yeah. But get someone else to go through and make sure that it's spelled right and that it makes sense. Because, I mean, there's some things when you transcribe interviews, it's like, do you transcribe literally word for word or do you try to edit together things? Because you know how we just, and when you're in speaking form, you just kind of stop mid-sentence and change shift pass.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And it's like it would not make any sense in written form.
So well, you get the transcriptionist that when somebody pauses and does,
Yeah, exactly.
And they write like, it cough. Out. It's like an entire line of just UH.
Yeah, yeah, right. So, you know, I mean, I have a lot of ideas for it and we'll see what happens. I mean, I think it would be cool. I'm very interested in the podcast industry in general, just seeing where that goes. Like mm-hmm. I said, I listen to a lot of shows and, you know, especially like if you look at Gimlet Media mm-hmm. and Startup and sort of, but one thing I'm not into is I'm not into that whole audio storytelling thing like Gimlet and Startup and Serial or whatever and all those. That's just not me. Like I love interview shows. I mean, I like listening to those shows, but I'm not in any way interested in making one of those types of shows.
No, neither am I. I love listening to them. I think Lore and 99% Invisible are incredible shows, but
yeah,
there's no way you could get me to make one of those.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, like for me and Johnny Gwynn, one of your former guests said this and yeah. I think he mentioned where we talked at Creative South, he said podcasting is punk rock. And I was like, I love that. I love that, man, because for me, like that is still kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. But now you have these radio people getting in. And to me, I don't know, man, what they're doing is awesome, but I still have a hard time considering Serial a podcast. I mean, that's a freaking radio show that somebody put out as a download.
It's an NPR show that just happens to be put out on a podcast platform.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. To me, like, you know, your show is a podcast and interview shows, like I want to get down to, let's just hear it rough and raw, man. And mm-hmm. I'm cool with editing and all that and good audio quality, but you know, I'm not trying to spend 40 hours making a 30-minute show.
No,
we just don't have that luxury, man.
Well, I know for me, like I edit as little as I can. I mean, there's editing that goes into it, but it's, you know, most of it's getting rid of, you know, if Skype screws up and there's a weird technical issue.
Yep, or, totally.
You know, inevitably.
And you don't edit for content, basically. That's like, that's what I tell people. I mean, I don't edit for content.
Somebody afterwards says, hey, I said something in there that I probably shouldn't have said. Or I'm not sure that I got that right. I'll take that out. That, you know, but
right.
I don't go searching for it. I, you know, I'll cut out if there's a, you know, a person who just like ums and ahs every other word. I'll cut those
yeah. Out. Just, what I run into is I'm always ordering things off of Amazon Prime, and my UPS man, it never fails, comes when I'm in the middle of a podcast. And I usually tell people ahead of time, I'm like, listen, that my UPS man may show up during the middle of this. So if they do, we'll just try to revisit whatever we were talking about.
Yeah, I always try to, like, if I get interrupted, I try to make a quick note real quick to remember where I was. So when I come back that I can talk about it.
Yeah, totally, man.
Cool. Well, wrapping up here, where can people find you online?
So the best place to find me is going to be through Twitter. I think like if for most people that are active there, it's kind of a hub how you can get to other places. But that's it's at T Adam Martin. So the T is for Timothy. I know that's probably going to be a question that people tend to ask that a lot. I'm one of those people cursed with the middle name. Like go on by your middle name. And no form is ever designed for you. It's always like first name, middle initial, last name. So yeah, at T Adam Martin on Twitter. And then my podcast is at Makers of Sport. And then the website is makersofsport.com. And then also if you just wanted to like get to, I guess, all of these places, a design studio and stuff like that, if you go to adammart.in, so admmart.in. Yeah. That's sort of my just, hey, my name is Adam. I'm a designer. Here are some things that I do.
Cool. And we'll link to all of this stuff in the show notes too. So
Awesome.
People can be even lazier and not have to remember it. They can just go.
Yeah. Listen, man, I just want to say, dude, I'm proud of you for keeping with this, because I know that we talked before you were starting this and mm-hmm. you had a couple questions, and I love seeing where it's going. I love seeing you being consistent with it. So keep it up, man. You're doing a good job.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yep. No problem, man.
And thank you for coming on. So,
absolutely.
You know, since you listen to the show, we end every podcast with go out and hug some necks. And I know you can hit that low register pretty solid. So do you mind taking us out?
Yeah, here we go. Go out and hug some necks.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
That was fun.
That was my best baritone.
Find out more about Adam on Twitter at @TAdamMartin, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at @CreativeSOPod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at @CreativeSouthGA, over at CreativeSouth.com, and I'm at @JFrostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. If you want quality 100% handcrafted notebooks, visit DapperNotes.com today to save up to 26% off your next order. Head over to Necronomicards.com to pick up your copy of Necronomicards today. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.